Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tune in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey everyone, welcome to Lunch Agenda on Full Service Radio. We're broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in DC, and I'm your host, Kiko Bourne. Lunch Agenda is a podcast that schools you on parts of the food system that are not restaurants and celebrity chefs. You can check out past interviews with DC food justice leaders like Dominique Hazard and Lola Bloom, and national food advocates like Mark Bittman, Marion Nessel, and Julia Tertian. All these interviews are on your favorite podcast app, and behind-the-scenes info and episode picks are at kikosfoodnews.com or KikoBuff on Instagram. You've tuned into a super special episode today, because I'm about to move out of the way and let some new voices take the mic. Today, Lunch Agenda will be hosted by the fifth graders of Mundo Verde Bilingual Public Charter School, where I work as the cooking and gardening teacher. Our Swans class has persevered for months to learn about podcasting, explore topics we want to speak our truth about, identify expert guests, write and rewrite and rewrite our script, and practice for today's broadcast. So, without further ado, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Clea, our first host, who will kick the show off. Take it away, Clea.
Do you think every school should have a from-scratch kitchen? Do you think that would make students healthier, or would it be a waste of money? Our class chose to explore this topic because our school, Mundo Verde, in Washington, D.C., built a from-scratch kitchen about 2 years ago. We wonder what our kitchen team does if they make a meal from scratch that the kids don't like and have to throw it away. And we wonder if a from-scratch kitchen also makes it harder to manage allergies because a meal doesn't come with a simple list of ingredients. This topic is important because lunch is a crucial part of our diet, and eating new foods at school helps our education about food in terms of what's healthy and what's not and trying new things. Eloise, can you tell our listeners about what kind of questions we're going to ask our guests?
Sure, Clea. Some perspectives that will be explored today are, is it too expensive for other schools to have a kitchen like ours? Do they create more jobs? And how about the kids who don't like the idea of eating healthier food? These are the people that we'll be talking to today. Dot Steck, Mundo Verde PCS head chef, is in charge of our school kitchen and has helped kids be more open to different foods since it was built in 2018. We're also going to be talking to Lee Howe, Director of School Food Initiatives at DC Green, and why some schools cook from scratch and others don't. But before we begin interviewing Chef Dot and Miss Howe, let's kick things off with some food news headlines.
Hi, my name is Diane, and I'll be kicking off some Swans food news today. Headline 1. The Centers of Disease Control and Prevention are making sure people don't eat raw cookie dough because it can cause infections such as E. coli. Symptoms typically appear within several days and can include severe stomach pain and vomiting. You might also get symptoms of salmonella infection, which are similar and might include a fever. With both illnesses, people usually recover within a week. But don't worry, there's an alternative. You could go to the dessert shop where they sell safe cookie dough to eat. Over to you, Colin.
Okay, a lot of big food companies like Sonic, Starbucks, and Pepsi are experimenting with the new food trend, sour foods. People really liked the Pepsi sour drink called the Baja Blast, but it was discontinued. Then Sonic tried making a pickle slushy, but it was too sweet. Starbucks' new food was especially unique. They have a frappuccino called the Unicorn, which is at first purple and sweet, but until it is mixed, it becomes pink and sour. This became popular, but none of my correspondents or I have seen it in stores. Back to you for the last headline of the day, Diane.
Lovers of Nutella, the chocolate hazelnut spread, were alarmed to hear that this company has been experimenting too. Nutella was first created after World War II as a replacement for a chocolate spread, and it became a worldwide success. The amount of milk and sugar in Nutella has changed over time, but people were not happy to hear about a sneaky ingredient change to their favorite dessert. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Alia is going to start talking with Chef Dots, so stay tuned.
Radio. Hi everyone, welcome back to Lunch Agenda on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel. My name is Alia, I'm a fifth grader at Mundo Verde Public Charter School in D.C., and today we're investigating whether or not all schools should have a from-scratch kitchen like ours. I'd like to introduce our first guest, Chef Dot. Dot Steck was born in Detroit, she earned a degree in painting from the University of Maryland, and has worked in D.C. restaurants for 30 years, including with Jose Andres and Ann Cation. Chef Dot specializes in Mexican and Spanish cuisine and has three kids, a dog, a husband, and a cat. Now let's get to the questions. Chef Dot, why did you start working in school kitchens?
I started working in school kitchens because Mundo Verde called me and said, we have a job. We need a chef to work and feed 400 kids. And I thought, that sounds a lot better than working in a bar. So I took the job.
Okay. Can you explain for our listeners what a from-scratch kitchen really is and how it works differently from most school kitchens?
Sure. Most school kitchens, when you come in the morning, say you get a biscuit and some jelly or something, someone has bought a case of the biscuits and brought it to the school, and we've paid for it, and then we just pass out what we got. But when we're making everything from scratch, we come in the morning at 5:30 and get the flour and the eggs and milk and make the biscuits ourselves. So it's definitely a harder job than just opening a box.
Do you think it's harder work for the staff in a from-scratch kitchen than in a kitchen where the meals are already prepared?
Yeah, very definitely it's harder, but it's also more fun.
What has been a struggle with having a from-scratch kitchen?
Having enough room to put everything that we need to use, because when you're cooking for 400 people and you're going to give each person an apple, you'll end up with 120 pounds of apples. So if you multiply that by all the ingredients, it's really hard to have room for everything.
What do you think are the benefits for the school or the kids in it of a from-scratch kitchen?
The food is better. I think that when we're cooking from scratch, we're actually putting our hearts into it. And so we're thinking mindfully about what we're feeding people, why we're feeding them, what the food looks like, what it tastes like, where it came from. So there's a whole lot more thought that goes into food that's cooked from scratch.
What kind of food can a from-scratch kitchen offer versus a kitchen that just heats up pre-made meals?
Well, today we had meatloaf, and the meatloaf was made from cows that grew out in Virginia at a farm that is for sustainability. So not only is the meat really excellent and local, but it's meat that is causing a difference in the world. And we were able to take that and mix it with fresh, wonderful ingredients to make what I thought was really good meatloaf today.
Thank you for coming. We appreciate your time. We would like to say thank you for supplying us with delicious food every day, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Hi, everyone. I'm Carlia, and I'd like to introduce our next guest, Lee Howe. Ms. Howe is the Director of School Food Initiatives at DC Greens, where she works to build a healthier, more just food system in her hometown of Washington, D.C. She also helps lead the D.C. Public School for Advisory Board made up of our parents, students, schools, staff, and community members with the mission of opening channels of communication and building a more responsive meal program across the 114 public schools in our city. Her passion for food education and sustainable farming took root in Montana while serving with Food Corps. She has a degree in anthropology from Barnard College. Hi, Ms. Howe. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you guys for having me.
Now we are going to ask you some questions about today's topic. Over to you, Nick.
What are some ways you have worked on school food?
So I will start by saying that before I worked on school food, because I really didn't think that was something I was particularly interested in, I was teaching about food, much like Kiko does with you guys. So I was teaching kids about the food system, where our food comes from, how to grow food in school gardens, and, loved it. But the more time I started spending in the cafeterias, I realized that students weren't actually eating the foods that we were teaching about every single day in classrooms and gardens and on farms. And I thought that was a real disservice to the students. So I got more and more interested in school food and how we could buy better ingredients and make more innovative and delicious menu items. So I started working on school food. And I've worked on it in a number of different ways. First, in procurement, which is a fancy way for buying food. So I work with school food service directors to buy foods that are in line with community values. So stuff like food that is supporting local farmers, food that comes from farms that treat workers fairly, food that comes from farms where animals are treated with care, and the food is being grown in a sustainable manner. I've also worked in an advocacy realm as well, where we're working to make sure that schools have funding for the equipment and, training necessary to actually cook scratch meals. So those are some of the ways I've worked on school food so far.
Okay, next question. What experience have you had with from scratch kitchens?
Yeah, so I have seen a number of different kitchens all over the state of Montana and in D.C. There's so many different types of schools in D.C. And I think one of the most fun and challenging experiences I ever had was actually working on a summer meal program in a little town called Boulder, Montana. And I have so much admiration for people like Chef Dot, because that was truly one of the hardest experiences of my life. So I had the opportunity to write the menus, buy the food, prepare the food every single day for a couple months, one summer, for about anywhere between 80 and 130 kids every day. And I'm not actually entirely sure if our kitchen would be considered a scratch kitchen, but we got really, really creative. I had to do stuff like cook beans in an oven because we didn't have a stovetop, and cook pasta in an oven. But we were able to make it work. And I only had two middle school helpers actually in the kitchen with me every day. But we got creative and we cooked most of our meals from scratch every day. So that was a pretty eye-opening experience for me.
Have you ever worked with a school to build a from scratch kitchen? How long does it take?
I'm going to let Dot answer that question.
It takes a long time. It took Mundo Verde about a year and a half to get the school from starting planning to actually serving our first meal of food. It took about 2 weeks to physically build the kitchen. It took about a year to get the permits that we needed to do it. And it took about a year to raise the money to pay for the equipment.
Geez, I'm about to renovate a house, so yeah, we're in the permitting phase, which seems interminable.
Do you think from scratch kitchens are healthier for the kids than others?
I do, because when you're cooking from scratch, you're using whole ingredients, so whole fruits and vegetables and grains and proteins, and turning them into a meal. So you have a lot of control over the actual ingredients that are going into the food. Whereas if you're not cooking from scratch and you just have a, you know, a microwave or something, you're relying on someone else to process and prepare that food for you. So you, you know, are getting, you know, oftentimes that food is shipped from afar, and so it's got stuff like preservatives in it so it doesn't go bad over long periods of time and other ingredients of concern. And so, yeah, I think when you're cooking from scratch, you you actually know what's going in your food, and you're not going to put in weird stuff like high fructose corn syrup or food dyes.
Or too much salt.
Or too much salt, right.
How else do you think from scratch kitchens affect students or families?
So one thing I've seen working with a lot of different schools that I think is really cool is a lot of sort of the more innovative kitchens like Mundo Verde, so these scratch kitchens, have been able to open up to the community and do stuff like cooking demos, or, you know, inviting students into the kitchen to cook recipes. And I think this is, you know, not all necessarily do it, but I think there's an opportunity to do it when you have the right equipment and space for it. And I think this is so important because over the years, people have really forgotten how to cook. And when you rely, sort of like we were talking about with the last question, on other people to feed you, you're not necessarily eating as healthy as you could be. And so I think cooking is one of the most knowing how to cook is one of the most important things for your health.
How about employment? Do from scratch kitchens create more jobs than kitchens that heat up meals that were prepared elsewhere?
Absolutely. When you're preparing a meal from scratch and using all of those whole foods we were just talking about, there's a lot more steps in the process. So we can take pizza, for example. If you're making a pizza from scratch, you're chopping the onions and garlic and sauteing it with tomatoes to make the tomato sauce, and then you're mixing flour and water and salt to make the pizza dough and letting it rise for a couple days, and then you're like chopping all of the different toppings that, you know, you want on your pizza. So I like lots of veggies on my pizza. And so, you know, maybe I'm chopping and sauteing mushrooms and sauteing spinach to put on the pizza, and olives and whatever else. That requires a lot of work and labor. Whereas if you are, and then you have to put it in the oven and bake it all. Whereas if you're, you know, not making a pizza from scratch and you go to the grocery store and get a frozen pizza, what do?
Put it in the oven.
You just put it in the oven and bake it at 350 degrees or whatever. So that's just one step. So think about, you know, cooking a scratch recipe for, what is it, 400 students at Mundo Verde? That is a lot of work. And so if you have 20 minutes to make the meal, can one person can one person cook, you know, pizza for 400 students by themselves from scratch? Nope. That would be kind of crazy. So it's definitely more labor to cook from scratch, and it would create more jobs.
Can schools find enough people who know how to cook in their from scratch kitchens?
I think absolutely. I mean, anyone can learn to cook with the right training and practice. And there's tons of amazing culinary training programs in the city, like DC Central Kitchen, who actually is the food service provider for 14 DC public schools, runs an amazing training program where they train hundreds of people every single year on how to cook professionally. And then, you know, lots of other training programs. I think there's also a lot of interest from the restaurant workforce in the city. So line cooks and chefs, much like Dot, who think it's actually much, much cooler and more meaningful to prepare delicious meals for students so that they can, be their best in school. So, I think there's plenty of people out there who would be interested.
What do you think the next steps are getting healthier kitchens for other schools?
Next steps. I think that, you know, we should continue to make sure that we're advocating for money for equipment and training of cafeteria staff. I also think that you guys are just so lucky to be at a school like Mundo Verde, where you are sort of creating a roadmap and best practices for other schools in the city. We have so much to learn from all that you guys have been doing these past couple of years.
If I could add to that, it's when I first started cooking here, you cannot Google how to make meatloaf for 400 kids. There's just not a recipe for that. And now, since we've been doing this a year and a half, we have about 80 recipes for different things that I could then hand to another school and they'll be able to do it. And it takes time to figure out how to feed that many people, and that's what we're learning how to do.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking your time to talk with us. I'm going to turn the mic over to Emma to bring our show to a close.
In today's interview, we explored whether or not every school should have a from-scratch kitchen. Our first guest, Chef Dot, told us about how and what a from-scratch kitchen is. For example, she told us that a from-scratch kitchen is when you make all the food there instead of just buying it. And she also told us about how when you work at a from-scratch kitchen, the food, you put your heart and thought into it instead of, like, if you're going to sell the food, you don't know who you're making it for, so you don't care, so you just make it for the money. But when you're in a from-scratch kitchen, you make it because you care. And our second guest, Lee Hao, told us about some of the reasons why every school might not choose to do it. Sometimes it takes a long time to make food from a from-scratch kitchen. Sometimes if you don't have the materials, you run out, or you don't have it, it's really hard to, you know, it's hard to do it without having ingredients that you need or the products that you need. One thing that seems clear to me is that school chefs need to know what the kids at school like to eat, so we're less likely to throw it away. If kids want to grow healthy, they need to eat healthy, and sometimes kids can be very picky, so we should do our best to stay open-minded and try new foods.
Thank you, Emma.
You're welcome.
You clearly captured a lot and modeled amazing active listening during that whole interview.
Thank you.
So before Lunch Agenda episodes end, I always like to ask my guests for an action item. One thing that you each want listeners to change in our day-to-day lives to help improve our food system. So, Lee, Dot, what is your Lunch Agenda action item? And it doesn't even have to do with school food or cooking.
I can go first. What do you think, Dot?
Okay.
So this goes back to sort of what I was saying earlier, but, You know, I think learn as much as you possibly can about your food, where it's coming from, you know, its nutritional value, you know, and, you know, where it's grown in the world, and start to think about, you know, how the foods you're eating and, you know, just whether or not they align with your beliefs and your values. And the more that we can buy foods and eat foods that align with sort of our belief systems, the better our food system will become. And, you know, the more we demand those foods, the more the food system will shift to meet those demands. So I think you guys are off to a great start at Mundo Verde. You guys already are so ahead of the game on all of this stuff. So
thanks, Lee. What about you, Dot?
I think my action is to make sure people understand that making food is giving of yourself. And so respect the lunch ladies.
Yes. Snaps to that.
Yeah, we were really lucky to spend about a month learning about every person on Chef Dot's team and their role and how you each avoid food waste, which is something we haven't even talked about today, but how actively you all kind of go the extra mile to throw out as little as possible and use every part of the ingredients. This is Kiko Bourne, and thank you all for tuning in today to this really special episode of our show. Next week, it'll be back to boring adult conversation, but I hope you'll tune in anyway. I'll be kicking off a series about Black food history in honor of Black History Month for February, and I'll be in conversation with the famous culinary historian Michael Twitty. Until then, have a good one.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.